Welcome, folks. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. And I said that Trump would be inaugurated on January 20th, and evidently I was wrong. So I'm a false prophet. You're going to have to take me outside the camp and stone me.
Can I throw the first stone?
Actually, no. You know what? I did say that. I didn't say it prophetically, and I didn't say that God said it to me. I said it, well, I guess I try to be honest about it. I said it out of a sense of hope and yearning, and I did believe that the truth would come to light by January 20th about what happened in the election. And obviously it didn't. So I was wrong because yesterday I turned on the TV and what the heck, Biden was inaugurated. So evidently, but we're in a very strange place right now because I still have the unfortunate sense that the election was not what it ought to have been. Now, when you say something like that, you have to say, oh, but I'm not calling for violence. The very fact that I have to qualify things and actually have to make the disclaimer, I'm not calling for violence, is so sick and despicable that it tells you where we are. In other words, it's because of that, that you know something's fishy. The fact that I have to say, oh, I'm not violent. Oh, I'm not a racist. I'm not a crook. If you have to say that, right, something's messed up. But we're at a point now where the other side has so demonized those of us who either supported Trump or were of the opinion that the election was not transparent, that tells you everything you need to know. And in this country, we have freedom of speech, we have freedom, and when you demonize people with whom you disagree, you're guilty. You are guilty. We don't demonize groups in America, in a land of freedom. We don't do that. And that's what tells me, unfortunately, that we're going through some tough stuff. I want to say up front, my faith is in God, where it's always been. It's never been in Donald Trump. And anybody who says that is also being really sloppy and absurd. But you know what? It's a free country. You can be sloppy and absurd. Go ahead. So I want to say, first of all, Albin and Chris, hello.
Can I just point something out? I think it's obvious to all of us now. It's funny how Russia had their Uncle Joe. Now we have our Uncle Joe. And I also thought of something, a song that kind of goes along with what happened yesterday. And there's Uncle Joe. He's a moving kind of slow at the White House. Usurped White House.
Usurped White House. Are you calling him an Adonijah, a Latter-day Adonijah?
So yeah, I got to get my dictionary or my Bible or something.
Adonijah was the third, I think, son of David. And he figured David was old. And I think Absalom and whoever else were dead. And so he assumed that he would be the next king. Ooh. And in fact, it was Solomon who was supposed to be the next king. And Adonijah decided to get inaugurated anyway. It is a weird thing, Albin, because in a free country, the idea that, I mean, look, I've been talking about this for years, that because we don't understand our freedom, it's why I wrote my book, If You Can Keep It, and I hope everybody will get a copy of If You Can Keep It and read it. I don't care if you do it on Kindle or Twitter. I mean, Twitter, if you do it on Kindle or you know, however you get it. By the way, I can say this, you can get copies, hardcover copies, which are strongly preferred. They're just way better. You can get it at mystore.com. Mypillow.com and mystore.com are both founded by Mike Lindell. Those are sponsors of this program. And if you use the code Eric, you get a big discount on everything. But my book, If You Can Keep It, I'm just going to have to be bolder about this because I really wish I could give it free to every American, because it was in the course of writing that book that I discovered some of the stuff we're talking about now, when you understand what freedom is and how you have to be vigilant. And so right now, when we in America are being told, oh, you can't say that, I think to myself, what? How dare you? This is America. People can say stupid things, stuff you disagree with. This is a free country. Free speech means people can say offensive things now.
Yeah, and sing stupid.
I'm not trying to be offensive, but if it's offensive to you, I have the right to say it nonetheless.
And, and sing stupid things too. Like I just sang something stupid.
Singing stupid things is not protected speech. I'm sorry.
Yikes.
But in all seriousness, that's what's so chilling to me is that people say, you can't question whether the election was on the up and up, because if you do that, you're inciting violence. That is nonsense. That I've said it a million times, and I'll always say, of course, I'm against violence. I was against violence when it was being perpetrated by the Marxist thugs of Antifa and BLM. And I'm against violence when it's perpetrated by people who would agree with me politically. I think it's fundamentally wrong in America to resort to violence. So, but the fact that you have to say that, that's what's so nuts, right? Yeah. Anyway, here's some good news. Yesterday I got home and there was a box, and I opened up the box and I found a copy of my new book, Fish Out of Water. It is brand new. Actually, it's not available officially yet. You can pre-order it. You can pre-order it Kindle, hardcover, or Kindle, or hardcover. But there's something so wonderful as an author. You know, it happens to me about once a year, I write a book and you get a box and you open it up and there it is. Yeah. And there's some really cool stuff. There's the family tree from my Greek side on the front. That's my dad at the bottom. And then there's the family tree of my German side in the back.
Wow.
And the story is obviously my story. It's the story of a son of immigrants and all that jazz. And in the middle, there are color photographs, except for the really old ones. But there are some funny. Wow. Anyway, there's pictures of my family. And this is what you don't have in the version. Look at the cute kid. What happened to him? Look at that. So there's pictures of me growing up and my family growing up and stuff, but it's really an American story. I mean, I think that's the point of it, is that, it's a story of growing up in the United States. Oh, look at Eric in the little bathing suit. How cute. It is really, it's my story, and this is me graduating from Yale. There's Dick Cavett. And stuff. There's my proud family, and man, I dedicate it to my mom and dad, and to my friend. This is my favorite person on the planet, my grandmother. Absolutely the greatest person. Anyway, so I write about all these people in the book, and a lot of it is very funny because it's true. Yes. Some stuff happened in my life which is like insanely funny, and I wrote about it. Some of it is really dark and serious and whatever, but it's coming out February 2nd.
Yeah.
And I'm really excited about it. We've got some great, great, great reviews already. I think, it was Booklist gave it a starred review. Booklist is an industry publication, and they called it a profoundly moving memoir. And the whole review was positive. So I'm very excited.
I love the back where it says they're Runyon-esque characters, and they are, because I've been reading it, and it's great. And we'll talk about it on the air. Maybe
there's stuff in there. Listen, you want to talk about race? I was working with people who went to a KKK gathering in Danbury, Connecticut, in 81. It was 81, I think, or 82. Maybe no, it was the summer of 82, I think. But I mean, like surreal stuff. We had race riots at my high school, horrible stuff. I mean, this is like, you know, this is in the 70s, but I write about it because it happened. And there's some loony stuff, sad stuff.
Eric, I hate to interrupt, but maybe Friday we can announce the CSI grand prize winners.
Go.
Okay, we raised over $400,000 for Christian Solidarity International to free thousands of slaves, and the winners for the two grand prize winners, Deborah Crook from Crescent, Oklahoma, and Marion Ivy from Mission Viejo, California. Those are the two
grand prize winners. And we're going to get their addresses. We'll announce those again tomorrow. That is fantastic. Folks, don't forget to check out Dutch Sheets. He's an encourager. We'll be back with Kevin McCullough and then John Zmirak. welcome back to the Eric Metaxas Show. As promised, Kevin McCullough. Kevin, most important question I can ask you. Do you pronounce your last name McCullough or McCulloch?
You know, it's an interesting thing. I never heard it pronounced McCulloch until about maybe 10 years ago. And then that's a regular question ever since. And I'm not sure where or why that is the case, but we generally
Well, it's kind of Scottish. It's McCulloch.
Yeah. No, but that's what I understand. But
you go by McCullough.
McCulloughs. Yeah.
Well, that's my first question. My second question is, what do we make of Joe Biden occupying the White House? Because I have a lot of thoughts on it, but I think my main question is, what are your thoughts of where we are now?
Where we are as we are sitting here having this discussion at this very moment is we are in the midst of a new administration that is going to radically change every single piece of government that they touch. We have seen in the first 24 hours the signing of some 17 executive orders that have stopped the border wall construction. They have renewed visa permits coming from countries where people cannot be vetted, like Syria and Iran and Yemen. They have engaged our enemies in a completely different way. I mean, by that, China and Iran and Russia. They have already spent tax dollars that you and I have paid to help fund abortions that have already happened in other countries outside of our borders now. These are all things that they came in on day one, signed 17 different pieces of paper, and are already transforming American policy in all of these different areas into a very different direction.
But this is obviously what America wanted, is it not?
That's what we're told. That's what we have evidently walked through the process to approve of. And the question now becomes, what do Americans think about what they've gotten? And are they going to have buyer's remorse? If so, there's going to be another election in 2 years to deal with that congressionally and another 4 years presidentially. But this is not, if people thought that the unity that we heard so much about yesterday was going to be anything that resembled actual unity, they were mistaken, because what we have not seen is a man who's come into office and said, I understand that we've had disagreements, but I'm willing to bury the hatchet. He made no compromises. He didn't come in and say to Pelosi or McConnell, stop the impeachment. This is foolishness. We need to move on. He didn't come in and say, we're gonna halt even some policy measures for a period of time so that we can have a debate and have robust discussion about them. They came in hitting the ground running. They have already taken us to a very far left-wing outlook, and that's where they intend to keep us, I think, for as much as they can get away with for the next foreseeable future.
Well, it's a comedy and a tragedy together, because first of all, I've got to ask you, did anybody see Nancy Pelosi yesterday? I did not see her in the few minutes that I could bear to tune in.
She was on the stage behind the president as he was being sworn in.
Okay. Well, then that
a great deal from her later.
I just wanted to make sure she wasn't arrested. Okay. So yesterday I got up at 4:45 in Lynchburg, Virginia. I was down in at Liberty University at an event, and I got up super early so that I could catch a flight to Charlotte, so I could catch a flight to LaGuardia, so I could be home in time to watch the shenanigans. And I say that respectfully. I meant to say tomfoolery. I think that's the more accurate term. The tomfoolery taking place in the nation's capital. And it was an extraordinary thing to try to process from my point of view, because I have been on the record saying that I don't believe this election was fair. Now, one of the ways that I know that that's probably true is the way dissenting voices are being treated in America today. People say, oh, you can't say that. We're going to come after you. I think, what? Hey, we're in America. In America, you can say blank the president, and people have been saying it, riding bicycles around the White House and stuff, and nobody does anything because it's America, right? But that's one of the ways that I process what is happening. I think to myself, when people try to shut you up and try to demonize you, that's one way you know that you're not missing something, unfortunately, right? I was knocked off of Twitter for another week because I dared to post my conversation with Mike Lindell. Now, again, even if you don't like what he said or don't like what I said or hate the conversation, or even if he said stuff that's false, it's a conversation between two people in a free country. But I was knocked off Twitter for that. That's what tips me off to the whole, to the bigger picture. Mm-hmm. So when I was watching this inauguration yesterday, I said this before, Kevin, I still have not figured out. I'm literally going to have to pray about this, how to process what is going on right now. In other words, if I don't think that this president was elected, first of all, let me say, for all the jugheads out there, I'm not advocating violence, nor have I ever advocated violence, even when I said we need to fight to the last drop of blood. If that meant
that
anything.
That doesn't mean that Twitter won't accuse you of it, though.
It meant my blood, right? Just as, you know, martyrs have fought to the last drop of blood, but they were not wielding the weapons. But the point is that, I mean, I've always said that we need to be respectful of our institutions and of our leaders, and I respect the president, whoever the president is. But I actually have a question now. How is he the president if there are these serious questions, whether, you know, it's just one of these bizarre things. So we have to say, I guess, that, yes, he is the president, but it's like with the biggest asterisk in the history of dingbats.
Yes.
And that's a typographic term, by the way, folks, when I say dingbat. Not that I'm not referring to people holding certain offices, but I'm just saying that the asterisk that says questions about this is kind of like when Ford became president. He was never elected. Gerald Ford was never elected, but he became president. How? Because Spiro Agnew, my fellow Greek, resigned, and he was replaced in the vice presidency by Gerald Ford. And then President Nixon resigned, and Gerald Ford, you know, it's like move up two places and become president of the United States. So it's, there's a big asterisk next to him. But what I saw yesterday was just what you said, talk about unity. But then he actually mentioned white nationalism. He said our big problems that we have to deal with in America are white nationalism and domestic terrorism. And I thought to myself, can you imagine the president of the United States feeling an obligation, I guess, to his people to bring up these two things, which I consider essentially fake? In other words, you really want to talk about the problems in America. These are manufactured issues. I mean, the idea that anybody that you know or I know would agree with white nationalism or domestic terrorism, much less be a part of it, is just outstanding. It is breathtaking to me that he said this in an inaugural speech where he's calling for unity. I just, like, I looked around in the room. My wife couldn't bear to be in the room while this was playing, but I thought, does he really genuinely believe that these are issues? I mean, I guess, Kevin, I'm just trying to process this myself, but like, that really grieved me that he brought these things up. Like, this is our big problem that we really need to, and he said, we need to wipe this out. And it sounds to me like that means when you say anything, like I've already said on this program, you need to come after people like me because I'm not towing the line. So we're going to label you a white nationalist, a domestic terrorist, or working with them. I mean, you talk about scary stuff in the United States of America. That to me is, that's considered scary.
No, you're not by yourself. And there's a lot of people that are pointing to the same realities, that it's one thing to have rhetoric that talks about being unified. And here's something else I think we all need to just get over. Unity may on some level be virtuous, but it is not the highest of virtues. And there are virtues that are actually much more valuable from a moral and even a civil scale. And one of those is freedom. Unity is talked about, and it's, but what they, you just, if you take out all of the references to unity in yesterday's speech and replace it with conformity, you have a better understanding of what the left actually means. But I think that there are some things that are far more important than unity. Clarity is one of them. To be clear and to clearly understand what truth is a far higher, greater virtue than unity. I also believe that at the end of the day, conformity is what they're really talking about. I believe that the defense of freedom is a greater virtue than what they're dealing with. So that's kind of where we're at. They're going to say a bunch of things in the coming years that are not going to make much sense, similar to what you've pointed out. They're going to talk about boogeymen, white supremacists, domestic terrorists. Meanwhile, they're going to institute policies that allow actual terrorists to get visas and penetrate our defenses and come to our...
You know what? We're going to a break. We'll be right back with Kevin McCullough. Folks, welcome back. I'm talking to Kevin McCullough, our friend. Kevin, trying to process what happened yesterday. I guess the optics, if you're just looking at it from a point of view of like TV, it felt cardboard. It felt like this is a cardboard inauguration because there's the weird how do we put it, I guess like a weird silence because of the social distancing, so it doesn't right. sound normal. It doesn't look normal either, but it looked sort of normal but not really. I couldn't believe when you see there was an old man, obviously some kind of a, I don't know, maintenance worker or something like that, sitting with kind of a rumpled up coat all by himself in a chair. And then I realized, oh, no, that's Bernie Sanders, the senator from Vermont. That was a comedic moment because he never looked more himself, a grumpy, aloof, apart, sitting there probably knowing that the Democratic Party stole the nomination from him. What do you think? Do you think he's thinking that? Because if I were he, I would be thinking that.
And probably stole it from him twice. This is correct. Somebody who returned to the scene of the crime and expected it to go differently the second time. And not only that, the optics of the whole day, Eric, later in the day, when you had the procession coming back from the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers in Arlington Cemetery, and they pull in and normally what is a parade route, and they get out of the car and they're waving, but then the helicopter wide shot shows that there's nobody on the street to wave to. So who are they waving at? Who knows? And then you see, oh, there's a random reporter walking with them. It was just, there's so many ways in which it was so unnerving. And all of the flags that were flying on the mall that they had to put up, because normally that would all have been packed with people and they didn't want it to look like a big bare piece of land. I have not confirmed this, but my bride told me she read somewhere yesterday that those flags were actually, if you sponsored one for one of them to be there, that the proceeds were going from that effort yesterday directly to Planned Parenthood. It's just a brand new world that for people that really did forget what it was like 5 years ago, we've entered, it's kind of like a time machine.
It'll be kind of
that on steroids.
Yeah.
And far more and a far more emboldened caucus within the Democrats that are going to be punching much higher above their class weight than they were when Obama first came into power. It's a different day.
Well, I don't know if you remember, but a couple of years after Obama had taken office, I saw a t-shirt someplace that had a picture of George Bush and it said, "Miss me yet?" Yeah. And it was hilarious at the time because I thought, yeah, we're starting to miss you. And I think many Americans are feeling that today. I mean, if somebody put out shirts, you know, with picture Trump, "Miss me yet?" Every day you're going to be reminded of what it was in terms of policy. Again, forget personality, because some people didn't like him principally because of his personality, but we're talking policy. When you tell me that he signs all these executive orders and that we're doing all these different things, what are going to be the results of this? I mean, if we're letting in people, these are the people that we let in the past. It seems to me like we were talking about sound policy and that Trump was trying to affect sound policy. It was being represented as racist, as xenophobic. That's another thing that Biden said. We have to call people out on this. It was shameful that Joe Biden yesterday in his speech referred to how we can't hate people that look different than we do. I thought, what a despicable thing to imply that this is another big problem in America, thanks to Donald Trump and his supporters, that we hate people who look differently than we do. I mean, I just have to say it's stunning. And the term gaslighting, we're going to get tired of that, 10 minutes ago, but it's an unbelievable thing that they have plausibly and somewhat successfully used the cudgel of racism, racist, bigot, to shut people up. That is fundamentally un-American. And it's worse than merely un-American because it's so sly to do that. It's so dirty. You know, there's fighting and then there's dirty fighting. But this was in his inaugural speech. And then at some point, he also talked about the four huge things facing us as a nation simultaneously. You know, there's COVID and I can't remember, global warming and COVID. The third thing, I don't remember the fourth thing, the third thing on this list of things that we have to fight against was systemic racism. And I thought, you know, you can think what you want about where we are in the racist issue, but guess what? We're better than we've ever been. when you look at our past and when you look at where we are now. But he laid this out as one of the fundamental issues facing his presidency that we're going to have to work together to defeat systemic racism. I guess he also signed an executive order having to do with transgender. Do you know about that?
Yes. And we're going to see all of the far left definitions of human beings, which I think the far left embraces something like 40 something different genders. You're going to see all of that codified into federal law, into federal use. You know, employment instructions are going to have these things.
It's going to get funny. I promise to let you talk more in the next segment. Folks, this is crazy stuff. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, I've got to tell you a secret about Relief Factor that the father-son owners, Pete and Seth Talbot, have never made a big deal about, but I think it is a big deal. I really do. They sell the three-week quick start pack for just $19.95 to anyone struggling from pain like neck, shoulder, back, hip, or knee pain, $19.95, about a dollar a day. But what they haven't broadcasted much is that every time they sell a three-week quick start, they lose money. In fact, they don't even break even until about 4 to 5 months after if you keep ordering it. Friends, that's huge. People don't keep ordering Relief Factor month after month if it doesn't work. So yes, Pete and Seth are literally on a mission to help as many people as possible deal with their pain. They really do put their money where their mouths are. So if you're in pain from exercise or even just getting older, order the three-week quick start for $19.95. Let's see if we can get you out of pain too. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com. I use it. It works. Hey, folks, welcome back to the Architect Show. Okay, so Kevin, what do you make? There have been people out there saying that there's going to be a military coup, that all these people are going to be arrested yesterday. And when I heard this stuff, I thought, well, you know, that might be nice, but somehow I don't see that happening. Have you been listening to that sort of talk? And
no.
What do you make of?
No, I don't think that down the stretch, the discussion of the March 4th secret date, and there were a lot of name it and
claim I haven't heard pastors. That.
There were a lot of name it and claim it pastors that were circulating videos to very unsuspecting groups of people that had said some very unhelpful things about, you know, God's defined will, and they knew for a fact that Trump was going to be replaced into office and all this stuff. And I don't, from a practical standpoint of trying to speak prophetically about the issues and the substance of what our culture is dealing with right now. And I don't mean prophetically as in predicting the future. I mean, speaking about the truth, about what they mean to the people that say one thing, but it really means something else. I don't find it helpful when we stir up people's hopes in ways that are not based in reality. And for anyone that is still out there saying, Trump still has a path to get in. No, this is done. God has allowed it in his sovereignty to occur. It is the believer's responsibility now to pick up the pieces and say, how then shall I live? And in the process of that, we need to do some very basic things. We need to figure out, are we teaching the right things in our local congregations? Are we gearing up the saints so that they are equipped to think and live critically and truthfully in the world around them? Are we giving them the reminder that God's grace and mercy is our greatest comfort, not who's in office, but who we can turn to when we feel like things are coming apart?
Amen to that. I still have to ask you, though, what would happen? I ask out of genuine ignorance. What would happen if some of the things that Mike Lindell said on this program the other day actually came out, or can they not come out? In other words, the idea that there was foreign interference in the election. In other words, if that comes out, what happens constitutionally? I mean, that's something that I don't really understand.
Let me be clear about where I'm really coming down here. I'm not saying that there was no fraud in the election. You saw my voice. I was banned from Twitter. I still don't have a ruling from them on what's going to happen. We're engaging massive legal power now to go after them, and we intend to. But I don't think that one has much to do with the other. The process has transpired. It has gone forward. It is not going to be undone. But that should be no disincentive to learn, discover, and investigate what the truth was. And we should loudly speak the truth when we know the truth factually and can demonstrate that with evidence. I was a little bit saddened, actually, that Sidney Powell revoked her own lawsuit in Georgia just a day before yesterday. When she says that she has mountains of evidence, it's the public duty that would be good for her to come forward with that and to press forward with.
Why do you suppose she did that? I hadn't heard that.
The best that I'm getting are rumors that Dominion had threatened. Well, Dominion has threatened to sue her for $1.3 billion. But she sided with the governor and the secretary of state in Georgia on Monday, I guess it was, to drop the case that she was laying out against Georgia. She didn't admit any culpability and anything going wrong or anything like that. She just decided to side with them and mutually drop the case. I don't think that's helpful. If there's real stuff there, I think that we as the American people need to hear it, see it, and know it. And there's enough alternative media now. There's an Eric Metaxas show. There's Kevin McCullough Radio. There's all these other avenues by which those people could present their case, and we could allow the public to see it. We're not dependent upon the legacy media to tell us what we can and can't investigate anymore. So I'm all in favor of actual discovery and the revelation of every fact as it sits.
But if she was threatened with a $1.3 billion lawsuit, isn't it possible that she had no choice, that she had to do that?
I would say she would. Sidney Powell, if you have the evidence and you're not worried about the $1.3 billion lawsuit because you can defend what you've said, then stand up for it. If you do think that you have a weak case and you could be found liable or guilty, then you probably did the right thing in dropping your situation, because you should only be proceeding forward on facts that are actually provable to begin with. They did 1.3 billion as the number because they definitely wanted to intimidate her. Now, that either worked because her case was bad, or she was more afraid of what the outcome would be than she felt confident in.
I think, Kevin, I'm probably speaking for a lot of people who we've lost confidence in our institutions to the extent that you could have a case that's solid and still not proceed with confidence. Because, look, first of all, we saw all of these courts refuse to hear evidence, which is stunning, absolutely stunning. I don't know.
And not in all of the cases was that true. In the Nevada case, Giuliani was allowed an entire, they were given an entire hearing before a magistrate in that state. And the weakness that was the case that was presented was determined by the judge upon discovery to be so weak that he threw out the case. That was only one of them that I know of. I don't know if there were other cases where actual evidence was allowed to be presented. I know there were many that were not. But in that one case, the Giuliani team, which was Giuliani and Ellis, and I think they had brought in Rick Grinnell from ACLJ and a couple of other people trying to talk about the dead people voting and so forth. Evidently, their facts didn't line up. And they had, it was a
what do you make deal. Of that?
Well,
these are three sharp people.
They are. And I was disappointed that for whatever reason, their claim didn't match what they had in terms of substance. But they were given discovery, and it did not hold the water that it needed to hold for the case to go forward. Now, I don't know if they were offered discovery in any other cases. I'm not aware of any. And they did win one in Pennsylvania early on. But
I guess my question is, when you're offered discovery, isn't that the judgment of the judge? I have to wonder, was the judge biased so that another judge would have said, yes, this is sufficient to go forward? And this judge didn't want to hear that. And so he said, I don't know, but this is where we are.
Well, they were granted about 15 hours to present what they had. That's an amazing amount of time to begin to lay it out in terms of initial
argument. No, I don't mean that. I just mean that the final decision is nonetheless with a certain judge. And then he says, okay, well, you laid it out. You didn't convince me. And that's that. Okay, we're going to be right back, folks, talking to Kevin McCullough. Hour two, John Zmirak. I believe you've heard of John Zmirak. If you haven't, oh boy, we'll be back.
once there was a way to get back home.
Hey there, folks, talking to Kevin McCullough. Let's talk about free speech. Kevin, as I've said throughout the last number of months, the reason that my, you know, spidey senses were tingling that something was wrong was not just the evidence I saw or what looked to me like, you know, smoke indicating fire, but is the idea that the left, whether it's the enemies of Trump or the enemies of the people who voted for Trump, the way they have proceeded, I mean, this is, again, what Biden, some of the things he said, he's talking about unity, and then he's gaslighting us, talking about lies, we've got to speak the truth, whatever. And then he's demonizing groups, you know, white nationalism, domestic terrorism. And I thought, holy cow, they're going to continue to use this to demonize people that have nothing to do with these things, to shut us up. That's what tells me they're hiding something.
I think that you're right. And I think that it is a strategy that proved effective for them in this campaign cycle. He started his campaign by wrongfully referring to Trump's appearance in the Charlottesville situation and what he said and didn't say there. He misquoted him on purpose. That got repeated a million times. This was a core component of their messaging in coming to office. But your other observation is equally true. There is a systematic deplatforming underway. 70,000 Twitter followers or Twitter accounts have been suspended, some of them under very spurious accusations of inciting violence or, you know, posting too many things that are untrue. And there's a third component to all of that that I think is rather disheartening, and that is that the Trump administration, one of its greatest strengths was that it didn't know anything about Washington, D.C., and it didn't play according to the rules of the swamp. One of its greatest weaknesses is that it didn't know anything about Washington, D.C., and it didn't know the rules of the swamp. And it handled some things with naivete that it needed to be stronger on. And one of them was Rule 230 and the regulation of big tech. We have, in essence, with Zuckerberg and Dorsey, Bezos, and these guys, in essence, we have created oligarchs that have more power than the elected government that serves we the people. And until there is some check and balance on their insane maniacal egos and hubristic reach that they think that they can act without any type of accountability I think we have much more to be concerned about than just even a Joe Biden sitting in at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, because what we figured out in places like the Soviet Union and Venezuela and Cuba is that it's the oligarchs that run everything. And your observation of not only how they refuse to allow evidence to be seen, but then they also systematically wiped out anybody that questioned the official record of events is a fundamental red flag that says, look at what's going on here. They're not allowing basic truth to be known.
And the way they used the you know, the Capitol riot or whatever they call it, we still do not know what really happened. That's what I find so interesting. In other words, there's this narrative out there, people freaked out. And then they just said, let's go with maximum freak out. Let's just go with that. Yeah. Let's codify it, wrap it up.
Which has been their mode of operation, Eric. They did that with pandemic. They did that with George Floyd. They've done that with every opportunity. Remember Rahm Emanuel whispering into the president's ear in the early stages of the Obama presidency, never let the opportunity to exploit a crisis go to waste. This is the playbook. It's Alinsky,
yeah.
It's leftism. It is,
yeah,
how they operate.
That's the point. We're going to have to end it there. Kevin, my friend, God bless you. Thank you for being part of this program and helping my audience and me process what is happening. We're going to keep praying like maniacs, because God is the solution to all our problems.
That's the actual
answer. In case anybody didn't catch that. God bless you, man. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Talk to you.